Peter Gagg, who drives it through. Oh, that's a magnificent goal, a sensational goal by the Millwall captain, Mitchell van der Gagg.
We had the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate, we never won anything.
Men's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again, and Millwall are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lukas Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable, and that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. To good deflection!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight, myself, Jay and Buster will go over a very impressive Scottish Cup victory over Cove Rangers, discuss the draw for the fifth round of the Scottish Cup, the departure of Liam Grimshaw, a bit of reaction to the latest crowd troubles this weekend at Stranraer in their match against Celtic, and give a Motherwell kind of slant in that. How are we, guys?
Aye, no bad.
Oh, very good, thanks.
Good stuff. Well, we'll start on Saturday in the 5-0 victory over Cove Rangers. Jay, we wanted a convincing performance, and we certainly got one. And progress in a cup, particularly the Scottish Cup, it's the first time in a few years.
Yeah, it was. I think we were, although you obviously want to treat it seriously, and you know, not as particularly when you take into account the likes of Albion Rovers and things like that, you wanted to make sure that you were going to do the job correctly. But I think most Motherwell fans, I know we were slightly surprised that, you know, an unchanged side. I think we might have expected, you know, perhaps McFadden to start, maybe Clarkson, you know, maybe Luke Watt at fullback, something along those lines. So it was, you know, a statement of intent from McGee right from the off. His pre-match interview I thought was quite good. You know, the basics of it were, you know, Mark, is this a banana skin? No, we're going to win. You know, it was obviously a wee bit more respectful than that, but that was the gist of it. So there was absolutely no doubt whatsoever given to the game on Saturday that, you know, we were going to win and win well, which I think was quite unique for Motherwell over the last few years. I think, you know, in the past we've kind of treaded carefully when it comes to smaller sides. We've kind of, early times, maybe took it for granted. You know, we've treaded carefully in that we've not really, you know, assumed that we're going to be in the next round. You're always kind of waiting for a banana skin and things like that. So it was quite good to see that we approached the game like we would any other. It was kind of typical of a McGee Motherwell performance in that we went out and blew them away in the first couple of minutes. And, you know, as soon as the second goal goes in, that was it. You know, we were in the next round.
Buster, we talked about the Albion Rovers game in the previous podcast. We also discussed the struggles at East Fife earlier on in the season, the defeat to Morton. The club and the manager, they really needed to go out and put on a show, and I think they did that. All due respect to Cove Rangers, they put up a fight in the second half. I dare say they competed a bit more, but it was the Motherwell performance that we're here to focus on, and I think it was very impressive, and it continues the kind of encouragement and the good vibe about the club just now.
I think, you know, you're right there. The way it is, you know, it was, in my opinion, it was a game where we actually needed to win. It couldn't be, you know, if it was even a close game, it would have been looked at as, you know, a sort of partial failure. I think the fact that, you know, as we say, we're out within, you know, maybe 90 seconds, we were a goal up. You know, obviously, the team lineup showed the intent, obviously, but, you know, to go out there and see them actually put in, you know, the standard amount of effort rather than, you know, not taking their foot off the gas because it is a lower league team. It was good to see that. It's good to see, obviously, that, you know, McGee and the team are taking these games seriously. It would have been nice maybe to see one or two players who have not seen much, maybe Dom Thomas and things like that from the start. You know, I know he came on, but it, you know, I think we were expecting maybe something like that, as Jay says as well. But until, you know, maybe 20 minutes to go when it was 4-5-0, then we started sort of to, you know, it was about a, you know, it was more like a testimonial match for McFadden. You know, we were trying to give him the ball, try to get him a goal. But until maybe that point, we went about our business. I think we showed quite a lot of respect by putting out a strong team to Cove Rangers. But I think it was also one where, you know, we couldn't mess about. We've had problems in the cup, obviously, in the past couple of years. So to go out there, state of intense, you know, and batter four goals in the first half, it was pleasing. But then, there was, you know, as you say, sort of took their foot off it a wee bit in the second half. But at that point, the job was done.
Jay, Buster mentioned James McFadden making an appearance. We hope perhaps it won't be his last in claret and amber, but while the footwork was there, he couldn't quite find that goal that would have capped off a glorious return.
Yeah, I think once McFadden came on, it kind of felt a bit like a charity match or something along those lines, or you know, a McFadden testimonial. You know, Cove were obviously all but done and dusted, although they did, you know, go close once or twice late on. But I think, you know, it was just queuing up for chance after chance. The likes of Ainsworth and McDonald seemed quite determined to get McFadden a goal. And, you know, I thought he kind of, you know, he kind of strolled it. I mean, he looked a wee bit tired near the end. I think that just comes with a combination of age and having not played first team football for a good few months. But I think that, yeah, it was an interesting performance. It's hard to make judgments. You know, you can't really make any sweeping judgments on McFadden or MDL for that matter in such a game, particularly when, you know, 4-0 up at half time. But it was good to see him in the park. It was good to see that he still had some of the touches. Some of his passes and through balls to, you know, Ainsworth and McDonald were different class. You know, that's the kind of thing that you don't really lose no matter how, you know, your pace, your fitness might go. But it was great to see that he still possesses that. And I thought during the game it did look, or during the second half at least, it did look as though, you know, there was something there between McFadden and McDonald. You know, a potential strike force. They seemed to be in the same wavelength. You know, I mentioned it in the game. I noticed McDonald has come out and said it in the aftermath. Whether or not that's something that might happen, depending on, you know, whether McFadden's deal in America falls through or not, we don't know. Obviously, it would be incredibly harsh on Louis Moult to sort of drop out anyway, but yeah, it was just good. It was good to have McFadden and, you know, getting a game with the call-offs and obviously McGee being quite reluctant to bring him off the bench in other games. It was starting to look as though he might go the whole of his spell at the club, or his third spell at the club, not actually getting a game. So it's good to see him. Just unfortunate that he didn't manage to find the net.
Buster, we're no clearer on whether the move to America will happen. There's certainly a real desire for McFadden to move to the States, but should it be the case that that deal doesn't happen, would you like to see him remain at the club for the rest of the season?
I suppose it depends on what his, you know, what his role would be. I don't know what he's doing, you know, behind the scenes in regards to since he got his short-term deal. I know he said before that he was helping out with the unders, he was doing this, he was doing that. So, again, it all depends on, obviously, finances, what he's doing, and whether or not he can actually bring something to the squad, which, by the fact he signed a very short-term deal anyway, maybe, you know, some people at the club do think he does have something to offer. As Jay says, you know, there was touches of class there. One or two wee sort of step-overs and things like that, you know, it looked like the James McFadden old, really, at times, but whether or not he's going to be able to do that against a you know, a higher level opponent, who knows? But again, there was times again, as Jay says, where they looked smart with his link up with McDonald. I think McDonald sort of seemed to relish being the sort of main striker as well, instead of sort of, he seemed to play off Louis Moult and sort of, you know, when McFadden came on, I thought they sort of switched that up a bit. McDonald seemed a bit more interested that day, at least. You know, I thought he sort of strolled the first half, then when he got up front, you know, up top, maybe it was the main man, he was done a lot of running and looked really good. But McFadden is a tough one, but if he's, you know, if people at the club think he's got his ability and he's got something to offer, I don't see why not. And especially, you know, if it's Mark McGee in this instance, because right now he's not doing anything wrong. He seems to know what he's doing. You know, as we discussed last week, you know, everybody's personal opinion of him aside, he's doing a good job. So if he thinks he's got something to offer, why not?
The draw for the fifth round was made last night, Monday. That's in case you don't know what day it is, guys. The eventuality of that was a tie at home to Inverness or Stirling Albion. In my opinion, it was one of the better ties that we could have got. We certainly wanted a home tie. Inverness struggling for form slightly this season. Stirling Albion would have been delighted to turn another go at Premiership opposition, despite the fact that I don't think there'll be a substantial crowd at that replay. I think it has been chosen for Sky, though, am I right?
Don't know.
It has been chosen for Sky. I was just pretending that I didn't know. So that'll be a wee bit of a money spinner for them. What's your reaction to the draw, Buster? A good opportunity, surely, to make the quarterfinals.
You would think so, yeah. And without disrespect to Stirling, especially if Stirling get through, Inverness beat us in, was it November or December? You know, it was around about that turn of the month anyway. You know, they beat us quite convincingly at home. So it depends on really, you know, if Inverness turn up. Certainly on that day, we didn't. That was one of the one or two blips under McGee that we've had. You know, since then, we've come on to a game. We're undefeated since then, basically, I think. Was Ross County before or after that? Anyway, we're undefeated since that point-ish. But, you know, it's Inverness would be a tougher game than Stirling, I think. So I'm hoping Stirling sort of sneak it in the replay, but, you know, I wouldn't hold my breath.
Jay, we're getting carried away. We've won one Scottish Cup tie in the last 3 and a bit years, and now we're looking for 2 in 2 months.
Aye, why not? I mean, the way we're going just now, might as well just assume we're going to pick up at least a point in every game between now and the end of the season. But no, it's a draw that I think we should be quite happy with. I think before, when we were talking before the draw about who we fancied and things like that, I think in most seasons, most years, I think I personally, and I think we probably all of us would be looking for a good away trip. It was always about, you know, Ayr United away, Stranraer away, something like that. But there seemed to be a different feeling going into this draw, at least for myself. It was, you know, a home tie that we can win. And I think that, you know, goes hand in hand with the kind of the newfound belief and the newfound confidence that there is around the club at the moment. Rather than getting into the draw thinking, right, where can we go and get a good day out? It was more about, right, who can we beat to get into the next round? Because we've actually got a good chance of putting a decent run together here. And I think that chance hasn't been dented any by the draw. I think a home tie against anybody would have been reasonable, but to get, you know, yes, there are teams that you would expect an easier game, if you like, than Inverness or Stirling should they get through. But, you know, Hearts versus Hibs eliminates one of those teams. As much as Rangers will probably be the favourites against Kilmarnock, you know, that's either Rangers or a Premier League team dropping out. Celtic have obviously got an easy tie, but at least we've avoided them. Other than those four teams, Rangers, Celtic, Hearts, Hibs, I would have been happy with anybody, particularly at home. So it's certainly a tie that I'm perfectly content with, and it's a tie that I think that we can go on and win. Because as Buster was saying, you know, we may have lost to Inverness the last time we played them, but we are a completely different team now, and we're a team that can get into that game and win it. Or, again, if it's Stirling, it's lower league opposition, and we should be looking to win that anyway.
I think it's worth stressing as well that even through our tough times last season, we were still fairly solid at home and had quite a decent home record. So now that we've actually pushed on and are starting to put a bit of form together, I stress the necessity to make Fir Park a bit of a fortress, and it looks like Mark McGee's making inroads at doing so. So I think that the importance of the game being at Fir Park can't be underplayed, and it was the feeling of excitement about the draw is just shows how far we've come in such a short period of time under McGee, because there's so many people with enthusiasm about football that, and Motherwell in particular, that didn't have that enthusiasm in September, October time.
Absolutely. I mean, I passed draws because, you know, the draw isn't often, obviously wasn't this round, but, you know, you often get the draw at like 2 o'clock on a Tuesday afternoon and things like that. And in the past, I've been quite happy just to ignore it and, you know, get a text message for someone or notice on Facebook who we're getting. But this was a draw that I wanted to, you know, make it home for work and get Sky Sports News on, because there is that kind of feeling. It just shows you how quickly things can turn around in football. And of course, you need to be wary that if they can turn positive in that short time, you know, short period of time, then they can obviously go the other way. But the way we're playing at the moment, the feel-good factor that's around there, then yeah, I think there was a lot of excitement about the draw. And as I said earlier, I think that's because, you know, I think folk quietly are confident that we can, you know, obviously with a bit of luck in terms of the next round, should we get through, who we get there, then, you know, there is, I think, a quiet optimism that we could actually have a half-decent cup run this year.
On you go first.
I was just going to say, I think you know, the two of you have made points on it as well, but I think the fact that we drew possible Premier League opposition as well, the home tie, is exactly what you have said it is. It's what we needed, it's what everybody wants, and it's, I don't want to say it puts it in our favour, but, you know, it will certainly help at least. The other thing I was going to sort of mention as well, in regards to Jay talking about the draw there as well, I don't really see why it was on the Monday. Fair dues, it was, you know, available on the telly, you know, at, you know, a reasonable time rather than during the middle of the afternoon. But there was two opportunities at the weekend. Obviously, the Hearts-Aberdeen game, you know, was on the Saturday evening. And then there was two games on the Sunday that were on Sky, I believe it was. You know, whatever happened to sticking the draw in the studio after one of these games? You know, that's... Not only that, it probably would bump up a couple of thousand on the figures that people are watching. Because I watched the Rangers game, or three quarters of it, and turned it off. Couldn't be bothered watching any more football. See if there was a draw after the, you know, the Celtic game, I'd probably have stuck about and watched that. And then, you know, I'd been able to catch the draw. But I suppose having it on a Monday night where people can see it is better than having it on a Tuesday afternoon in the cupboard at Hampden, I suppose.
I just think there's a real difference between... I've followed the English FA Cup this weekend with a bit of despair, watching basically all the teams making 7-8 changes to their usual starting 11s for cup games, almost kind of devaluing it beyond belief. There was countless games on the television, and BT Sport and the BBC, who don't have any other live English football, were really giving it the hard sell. And it was just such a disappointment. And it's obviously a proud trophy, the FA Cup, but it comes with the same reward, the place in the Europa League, as does the already well undervalued Capital One Cup there. So I was quite pleased to see all the Scottish teams put out basically full strength squads and treat the oldest cup competition in the world with a fair degree of respect. The other thing for me is, I thought that they got it absolutely right, not with the television choices. I don't believe that either. I think the Celtic game is always going to be on the telly, with it being in Stranraer, and there have been limited tickets available for the Celtic supporters, but there was no sense in putting Rangers versus Cowdenbeath on, absolutely none. But the promotion, the build-up, I think the television package and the programming Saturday night, I think there's a fair bit of buzz about the Scottish Cup this year, and that was reflected in the crowds as well. Normally, pay at the gate, games at Fir Park, the attendance drops quite drastically. It didn't particularly do that on Saturday, despite the fact that Cove Rangers' non-league or Highland League opposition, you see the support that Hibs took to Raith Rovers, Aberdeen took to Hearts. I think that they've packaged it well this year, and if they continue to do that, then it'll keep the prestige of the Scottish Cup up. Whereas you look down south and just it's dying in its arse, the FA Cup. It's incredible.
There's no money
yeah.
in it.
Well, I suppose it's a direct comparison to, and also you're playing in April, May time, when it's getting to the business end of the Premier League season, and also the teams in Europe are fighting out there over two legs. I think the replays don't help either. That you think that, I'll use Tottenham's game against Leicester as an example. I know we're deviant away to talk about English football for a wee second here, but Tottenham had rested players. Perhaps if they'd played them, they wouldn't have to play this replay. So yeah, effectively, they've screwed themselves into getting an extra game.
As I says, though, I think the problem there is there's no money in it compared to, you know, the Premier League prize money, for example. So, you know, if they go on through the rounds, there's going to be prize money involved, obviously. But, you know, it's probably the difference between coming 7th and 8th in that league. So I think that's where that problem arises in England. Whereas you mentioned, obviously, you think that, you know, there seems to be a lot of teams up for it up here. I genuinely think that's because for teams like ourselves, you know, they sort of know the bigger teams, you know, at Celtic. And again, possibly Rangers. I hate to sort of talk them up again, but, you know,
well, let's just not,
they've probably got a bigger wage budget, you know, than us at Inverness put together, and another couple of teams in there. But, you know, that's, with their wage budget, you know, they should be one of the biggest teams in the country. So with them being in the state they're in, although they're a lot better than they were last year, Celtic being the state they're in as well, the Scottish Cup is, for teams like, you know, ourselves, Inverness, who won it last year, you know, dare I say, teams like Dundee United or, you know, whoever else, Hibs, whatever, there's a good chance. All you need to do is win 6 games in a trot. Some of them might not be against the greatest oppositions either. You're obviously hoping that somebody knocks Celtic out, whether that be yourselves or, you know, if it was East Kilbride, that'd be hilariously brilliant. But, you know, I don't imagine that's going to happen. But you're hoping something like that happens, eases your route, and then you're playing similar level teams to yourself. And, you know, come the quarters or semis, you're in with a great chance, basically, depending on the luck of the draw. And I think that's why... Sorry, on you go. Cheers.
I was just going to agree with you. I mean, that is it. It's a winnable trophy. And I think it's, you look at Inverness winning last year, you look at, you know, yeah, in the league, Celtic are going to win the league. You could talk all day about Aberdeen and Hearts maybe, you know, running them close to a certain point in the season, but Celtic are going to win the league. The League Cup, nobody really cares about. So the Scottish Cup is the one trophy where you genuinely don't really know. Yes, you could say Celtic are favourites for it. You can say Rangers might go far. I still think they're rotten, to be honest. I think they're absolutely rotten. I think that when they're playing against teams like Cowdenbeath, then fair enough, they look half decent. But when you look at some of the signings they're making for lower league in England, it's certainly not going to put them in great stead for when they, if they come back up next season. They're certainly not going to be challenging Celtic. So I don't think Rangers are particularly good. So yeah, nearly Celtic, that's the point. This is a poor, poor Celtic side. This is one of the poorest, you know, last season the Celtic side was poor, but they still had guys like Van Dijk, who was, you know, different class. Whereas this season, it's just a really, really poor Celtic side in the context of Celtic sides. So you now have a situation where, you know, lots of teams can go into the Scottish Cup now thinking that they've got a chance of winning it, that they've got a chance of getting to the final. And even smaller sides, you know, like teams like Dunfermline, for example, perhaps not the final, but, you know, what is to say that with a bit of luck of the draw, a team like Dunfermline can't get to the semi-final?
It's paid at me.
You know, that's the thing, like, these kind of teams can do that.
Yeah, I completely agree. The thing is, another slant on it was that I was reading, again, comparing it to England is slightly naive, but the Exeter chairman was talking about how they made £700,000, or they will make £700,000 from playing a replay against Liverpool, whereas they would only have made 70 grand if they'd actually advanced 2-1.
Well, that's the problem as well. You know, everybody goes on about the romance of the cup, and as much as they try and talk about the romance of the cup on Match of the Day and things like that, it's really non-existent, I think, in England now. It's been completely obliterated by the financial side of it. You know, whether it is money spinning replays, whether it's television money, whatever it is, it's all about cash. We've known that for years. That is, I mean, English football is the most overrated rubbish in the world, because it's all about cash. It's all about cash. Where I think up here, yes, it will still be, you know, there will be smaller teams who will be grateful if they get a tie at the likes of Celtic Park so they can get a bit of cash. But I think underlying the Scottish Cup, there still is that romance of the Cup. There still is that,
you know, excitement and anticipation of it that I think is being lost down in England. So I think definitely if you're going to compare the FA Cup and the Scottish Cup, yeah, one's got all the publicity, all the advertising and all the hype, but the other one, our Scottish Cup, is still far better, I think, in terms of competition, in terms of romance and in terms of, you know, the genuine, what the cup competition is meant to be about.
We'll move on, guys, and talk about a few players departing the club. Liam Grinshaw, his loan spell cut short, despite the best efforts of Mark McGee and the Motherwell board. It looks like he's going to join Preston North End. A huge blow to the club and the team just now as well. With look forward to the game at Tynecastle on Saturday. We're now going to have to go without the services of Keith Lasley, who's suspended, and Grimshaw, who's been a mainstay in the team under McGee. Jay, it came as a bit of a surprise, given that the club seemed to be making very positive noises, but reading deeper into the story, it looks like there was very little that could have been done to prevent it.
Yeah, it's one of those ones where I think when you've got a young player from the likes of Man United on loan, regardless of how well they do, I think you assume that you might have a good chance of managing to extend the loan. You look at the size of some of the youth squads that the likes of Man United, Man City and the big English clubs have. So I was optimistic that we might be able to extend his loan. But obviously that was without considering the idea that he'd, you know, maybe put himself in the shop window and Man United might want to move him on. So I was quite hopeful we could have kept him. I think he's came on to a game in the last few weeks brilliantly. I think he's became absolutely integral to Mark McGee's plans and what he's been doing with the team. I think he's been a driving force in the form that we've shown in the last few weeks. So it's a big loss. Slightly more, you know, it's even more disappointing when you read and find out that it sounds as though we were quite close to either extending his loan or even making him a Motherwell player, depending on how you read the comments. So to know that we were pipped at the very last minute, you know, kind of rubs salt into the wounds, but at least we were proactive, at least we were, you know, attempting to get him to stay, which is encouraging. And yeah, it's disappointing. I think that, you know, we've lost them early doors. We've still got a few weeks to get replacements in, so that's encouraging. I think McGee will do so. So I think by February we might look back and be okay. But, you know, you're right, it kind of exacerbates the situation when you're going into the game at Tynecastle now without Lasley or Grimshaw. And I think it makes it seem like a far bigger loss than maybe it will be long term. But who knows, because he was really coming on to a game. And I think if he'd stayed for the rest of the season, then he would have been a fantastic player for us.
Buster, this does create opportunities for the guys who perhaps some of them felt that they were on their way, and now suddenly two positions in the centre of the park have arisen for Saturday's game. It's a bit tight to get players in between now and Saturday. You would think guys like Jack Leach, Chrissy Cadden will be licking their lips in anticipation at a chance of first team football and a chance to impress the manager?
I think so, yeah. Unfortunately for Jack Leach, I don't think he's anywhere near the team, to be honest with you. He just seems to have dropped right off the radar. I don't know what's happening there, but maybe the fact that there is a shortage, you know, may see him come in. Again, when Jay was speaking, sorry, I dropped it for, you know, 20 seconds or so, so I didn't really catch everything he said, so sorry for whatever he said here, but
it's quite alright. You then shouted, have I dropped it?
But I think it's, there was obviously talk of Willie Lang playing centre midfield once he did for Celtic. Then it seemed to disappear, and I thought, you know, McGee was just covering his tracks for trying something different. I honestly think we might see him in there again. You know, I believe he played for the 20s today. I don't know where he played, but, you know, he's maybe just getting a wee bit of practice in before he's back in the team for Saturday. Chrissy Cadden's maybe a good shout. He's, you know, featured on the bench a few times, so, you know, maybe he's going to get a place in the team there. There's also talk of possibly moving Josh Law. I was reading the forums today, and look, people were suggesting maybe we move Josh Law into midfield and bring in a you know, maybe a Luke Watt or somebody at right back. But I think, to be honest with you, that's maybe a bit much. Josh Law's cemented that right back place. He's playing really well there, so to take him out of there might put him out of stride a wee bit. Whoever's playing at right back is going to be up against the boy Sam Nicholson or whatever his name is as well, who's a right good wee player. So you'd maybe want somebody who's, you know, been playing regularly to go up against him as well. But it's going to be difficult. It'll be interesting to see what McGee does. And you know, it's going to be, I think it's going to be Lang ultimately. Lang, Pearson, and probably the two wide men, Ainsworth and Johnson. But we'll soon see. And I also seen suggestions of dropping, you know, McDonald back in. I don't want to see that at all. So hopefully, you know, it does end up just a sort of flat 4-4-2 rather than, you know, drop McDonald in there to help as well.
Yeah, you would have to hope that some lessons would have been learned from the trip to Tynecastle earlier in the season, where we were overpowered and McDonald was going through that spell where he was playing in them almost as a midfielder and looked like a fish out of water that night.
Yeah, I think, you know, we spoke about it earlier in the season. I don't think he was happy playing in there. Certainly didn't seem happy, didn't he? You know, his actions on the park, it certainly didn't look like he was happy. So I think that'd be a step backwards to put him back in there.
Yeah, you kind of need McDonald to be on side with what the manager's doing to get him in the right attitude and to get a performance out of him, I think. He's a bit prone to dropping off if things aren't going his way. And I think given that he's been in an improved run of form and he's scoring goals again, it'd been a bad decision to shift his position and his role in the team.
I agree with that, yeah.
I was going to say, I think, you know, it's a bit of a cliche, but I mean, these are the situations where the manager, you know, earns his wage. He's came in, he's done a good job, he's got his playing well, but it's now, you know, this is probably his first kind of tactical challenge, his first real obstacle in terms of the lineup he puts out. And it'll be interesting to see what he does, because I think as Buster said, I think the two wingers are probably guaranteed to start. I think you'll probably see Johnson in the left and Ainsworth in the right. I think that makes sense based on the personnel available. But, you know, that's attackers, they're out and out wingers. And if you're going away to Tynecastle and you're playing with two wingers and a central midfielder in Pearson, who's not exactly, you know, an out and out defender, or, you know, he's not a defensive maestro by any means. So who you pick to play alongside him, you know, is a big, big deal. It's a big decision. I wouldn't be surprised to see us go one up top just for a one-off game. I genuinely wouldn't be surprised to see him either go with McDonald or Louis Moult. I think the idea of dropping McDonald back, we've seen it doesn't work. But I wouldn't be surprised to see one up front and then perhaps Cadden and Louis Lang in a midfield three, with perhaps Lang just sitting in front of the back four. It's not ideal, but, you know, these are the situations. At times, you need to kind of just, you know, go with something that's going to hopefully grind you out a result. And I think a midfield five at Tynecastle would perhaps set us in better stead than, you know, throwing an untested youngster, but a youngster with very little experience into the middle, or a centre-back into the middle, particularly when you're playing with two wingers.
I suppose the thing there as well is that Stephen Pearson got a couple of goals at the weekend. We've been talking up his performances in the last couple of podcasts. So he's a player that's capable of bursting forward and getting in amongst the goals. So there would still be goals within the team despite the fact that we've went 4-5-1.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean 4-5-1 sounds defensive, but the reason I would be playing 4-5-1 is because you would be having Pearson pushing forward for the middle, and you would have two out and out wingers. And let's remember, Tynecastle's a wide park, so you can use those wingers to good effect. But, you know, who knows? I mean, as Buster mentioned, you know, you've got lots of other options. The idea of Law maybe pushing forward. You know, you don't really know what McGee's thinking at this moment in time, because it's obvious that up until Saturday, he's chosen 11, he had his first choice 11. You know, 11 that he was so confident in that he didn't even want to change for a cup game against Cove Rangers. So it'll be really interesting to see how he combats the situation. But I think, you know, had we kept Grimshaw, I would have liked us to get into the game looking for the win. Without Grimshaw and Lasley, I think, you know, going there and trying to get a point would be a good plan.
guys, we'll just talk for another couple of minutes about the Hearts game. Jay, it's that excitement word again, which is excitement. The feeling about the club is good just now, and this game takes on a real significance. We've talked about there's going to be a period in this season where it will be decided whether we do have to battle it out for relegation, whether we'll just kind of languish or play out the season in the top half of the bottom six, or we make a push on. And games like this, I think, will be pretty decisive in settling that. Hearts have had a very good first season back in the Premiership. They're very solid, they're a physical side. But I think we showed at Fir Park, even when we were on a poor run of form, that we can match them. We twice went ahead. I know we were pegged back in both occasions, but I think over the 90 minutes we perhaps deserved to take all 3 points, and I think we need to remember that going into Saturday's game.
Yeah, I think Hearts are a decent side. They're not, you know, up at the top end of the table for nothing, but I do think on their day they can be, you know, combat. I think you can, if you have a plan going up against Hearts, then you can beat them. I think that the thing Hearts have got is they do have individuals who possess a bit of quality. Osman Sow, I think for me, is a fantastic player. You know, not obviously he scored, I think it was the second goal at Fir Park, an absolute screamer. I think he's a fantastic player. He's got that bit of magic. Wanma has obviously come in, scored goals. Buster mentioned Sam Nicholson earlier. So they've got really good players. So if you can, you know, if you can stay organised and you can have a plan against those kind of players and you can keep them quiet, then there's no reason why you can't get a result. I think the one thing that I noticed, particularly at Tynecastle earlier in the season, was that they're well drilled in the sort of the sneaky side of the game, the tricks and the kind of the dirty aspects of the game. Lots of time wasting, lots of winding up Motherwell players, lots of leaving the boot in, diving, all those kind of things Hearts players have got to a T, and it's long been the case that we've been pretty poor at it, not just, you know, doing it ourselves, but we fall for it all the time. So, you know, I think it's a day for, you know, the experienced players to really step up, go with a game plan, try and nullify the threats of Hearts, and, you know, as we said earlier, we've got players who can create things, we've got players who can score goals. So as well as Hearts have done this season, I wouldn't be going in with any great fear. I'd be going in with a game plan, and, you know, there's no reason why we can't, you know, get at least a point.
Buster, a positive result would really give us a bit of momentum going into the next 3 or 4 games, which all look winnable on paper as well. I know we have got a bit of momentum with us, but the Cup perhaps has broken that up a wee bit, just taking our eyes off the league for a week. We need to get back on it and right in amongst Hearts. It's going to be a very tough fixture, but I just can't help but feel that they'll be quite worried about our visit as well.
I think so. You know, we can talk about their players all day, you know, but there's 2 or 3 players in our team as well who, on their day, you know, can change a game as well. I think it'd be interesting to see Marvin Johnson go up against the striker they play at right back. Can't mind his name, but the big boy who plays at right back, he used to play up front, because I think he's a rotten right back, to be honest with you. He's good. He's pretty decent on the ball. All right, going forward, and he's about 6'2". But every time I see him, he looks terrible at defending. So it'd be interesting to see if Johnson can maybe get a run at him. Although he is kind of...
Is this Callum Patterson we're talking about?
Yeah.
I've got to say, I think Callum Patterson's one of the best right-backs in Scotland.
I just think he's an excellent player.
I think he's a great player.
He's
got a
great goal-scoring record. He is traditionally a right-back. He can basically play it anywhere, though, but he's physical.
I think he is one of those players that I was talking about earlier at Tynecastle. He certainly has the dirty tricks in his bag. Yep. But I think he's a great player, and I think it's only a matter of time before he's capped for Scotland.
Well, again, I just don't think he's that good defensively. You know, I already said, you know, he is pretty good. He's very good going forward. He's good in the boys. He's tall. He's good in the air. He's fast. I just don't think he's very clever defensively, to be honest with you. So it'd be interesting to see, you know, Johnson getting a run at him, see if he can put him under a bit of pressure. And you never know, maybe Callum Patterson will change my mind then. But it's going to be difficult, as Jay says, because every time I've seen Hearts, they are a very, very dirty team. I think it was on Saturday when I was sitting watching them. You know, I tweeted about how they were a really good team, but they were incredibly dirty. Basically, you know, I don't want to say dirty bastards, but they were honestly.
You just
every time. I know. Maybe you can edit that out or something.
I think the circumstances of that game on Saturday were perhaps upped a bit as well, because McInnes had kind of suggested that they were overzealous and too physical a side, and I think that just spurred Hearts on to do exactly that, and they overpowered Aberdeen. I don't think that, apart from the tackle that stands out for me is the one at the end, and it was Callum Patterson, funnily enough, when he took someone down after realising he was breaking away, and he just basically took one for the team. But I just thought that they were more powerful. I don't think they cheated, to put it that way.
No, again, you know, you're maybe right. It's as Jay says, you know, they're very clever at what they do, and I think the fact that Derek McInnes is pointing out just sort of proves my point. Although Derek McInnes is another matter, we'll leave him to the side, don't we? But I think they're beatable. As I've said before, everybody in this league can beat MD. Hearts have been doing very well for the comeback up, so it's going to be difficult. Jay says it'd be nice if we could go out and play for a point, but I don't really think MD sort of plays for a point. I understand what it means, but you know, it'd be good if we come away with a point, but I don't see why we cannot possibly go and try and aim for three.
Guys, we'll move it off the subject to Motherwell on the Park just now and move things to off-field matters. An issue that's been raised due to the smoke bombs and alleged sectarian singing at the Celtic Cup tie against Stranraer on Sunday. There's been a hell of a lot of discussion about the Fans Against Criminalisation group and their attempts to eradicate the bill, which they believe is discriminatory against football supporters and unfair. I must say that any time this issue is discussed, there's always one example given, and that is of a Hamilton fan chanting, "Well, well, fuck the well," and was subsequently banned or arrested. I'm not sure if this actually happened or whether it's just one of these urban myths that is went on and on and on. But this group clearly are looking to change the way that football fans are treated within the confines of football stadiums. And we've discussed in the past, particularly after experiences at St Mirren in recent seasons, that we do believe that there is a great deal of scope for change in the matchday experience and the way that football fans are treated from time to time. My issue with them is the way they're going about this. I didn't agree with our group, the boys, working beside the Green Brigade. No matter what you think of the Green Brigade, I just thought it was a very naive way to get your message across, halting a game, throwing tennis balls onto the pitch. It didn't really make much sense to me, and I don't think it really got any sort of message across apart from there's these groups misbehaving again rather than actually posting out any sort of significant message. The danger for me is if you're going to present a point and go to the authorities, you've got to actually do it in a mature and adult way, that with a bit of kind of respectability about yourself, that you've not been breaking the rules on a regular basis. And unfortunately for the Green Brigade, and perhaps to a certain extent the boys as well, with certainly in regard to flares, not the sectarian singing, it must be said, have let themselves down in that score, Jay.
Yeah, I'd find it hard to disagree. I mean, I've said plenty of times before that the bill itself is poor legislation. It's, you know, you can sit and you can go and read it, and you can sit there and you can think, oh yeah, that sounds fair enough. That sounds like, you know, a civilised, sensible bit of legislation. The problem is it doesn't work in practice because it's purely open to interpretation. It talks about, you know, offensive language, offensive behaviour and threatening communications, and elects to gain support has to have respect, it has to be sensible. And you don't get that by, you know, continually being involved in antics which go against what you're saying. We're in a situation where there is an argument to be had, there's a debate to be had. The bill is poor legislation, it has to be challenged, but it's never going to be challenged. And it's never going to be challenged because the wider public, many of or most of whom are not football fans, and the politicians, just see the flares on the park on Saturday, Motherwell fans invading the pitch at Fir Park in the playoffs, sectarian chant at Ibrox. They see these things reported in the news and they think football fans are troublemakers, football fans, you know, need to be dealt with, and the ones moaning about the bill are only doing it because they're annoyed that they don't get to behave they want to. And it's about challenging that perception. And the problem I have is that there's never any criticism from these campaigns about their own supporters. I've seen today lots of posts on social media about how, well, smoke bombs and flares aren't really that bad. The campaigns need to realise that you don't get anywhere by condoning this behaviour. You need to criticise your own fans when they're in the wrong. You might think that smoke bombs and flares don't do anything. You might think that they're harmless and just a bit of fun, but they're against the rules. And if you break the rules, you cannot then be taken seriously when you want to change the rules. It's like, you know, we've recently seen, well, not recently, but the last couple of years, the drink driving limit has been reduced. It used to be you could have a beer and then drive about. Now you can't drink anything. If you think that's heavy-handed and you think that it's punishing people and you think it's unfair because people should be allowed to have a beer and it doesn't have much of an effect, that's probably a legitimate view. And you could probably go and you could lobby your MP or you could campaign and protest, and people will probably give your argument some thought and some consideration. But not if you continue to have a beer and then go driving. If you get found that you're drinking and still driving and breaking the rules just because you think the rules are rubbish, then folk are just going to throw your argument out, think it's completely childish and just think you're a nutter. And it's the same sort of argument here. We've got an issue where fans with a left hand are invading parks, throwing on smoke bombs, you know, singing sectarian songs. And of course, I'm not including Motherwell fans in that, but, you know, that is what the general public see. That is what your politicians see. And with their right hand, they're moaning about, you know, the way they're treated. It can't work. The two aren't, you know, the two can't work together. We're in a situation where the political landscape in Scotland will see an SNP government in Holyrood. There is no challenge to that whatsoever. So there's no need for the Scottish government. You know, it's not, this isn't a vote winner or anything like that. It's not actually a big deal. Out with football grounds, out with, you know, social media and this podcast. In the Parliament, this is not a particularly big deal. Nobody is really talking about it. And that's an issue, because until you get people talking about it, it's not going to change. And the way you get people talking about it is being squeaky clean, following the rules as they currently are, and showing people that you can behave, but you believe that you should be due, you know, the benefit of the doubt and more freedom to, you know, stand and sing and do whatever it is you want. And that also will make those heavy-handed incidents stand out against a backdrop of well-behaved football fans. Instead, you know, today we had, you know, I think it was two members of the Fans Against Criminalisation campaign giving evidence to the Scottish Government. You know, a day after or 2 days after, Celtic have banned three fans for causing trouble at an away game. It doesn't work. You know, last season when we were doing a podcast and this kind of thing, heavy hands, empty stands have put some really well-worded and thoughtful statements about the way they've been treated when things have happened at the likes of St Mirren Park. But when Motherwell fans misbehave or act poorly, nowhere to be seen. And that's the point. If they want to get respect and they want to get their argument heard, they need to start criticising where criticism is due, not just at the stewards and the police and not just at the government policy, but also at their own fans. That's currently not happening. And while it's not happening, their argument will be, you know, continued to be viewed as just the ramblings of misbehaving football fans who are angry that they can't do what they want.
The thing for me as well, the end goal is obviously a better experience at the football and better treatment from stewards and police towards the fans. But at the same time, there's never going to become a point where they're going to be told, listen, we've actually thought about this a wee bit more, and we're going to allow you to let off smoke bombs and flares at the football. These things, unfortunately, for the guys doing this, we're not in Italy, we're not in Serbia, where these things are part of the football experience and commonplace. It's not allowed. It's, for me, I don't mind whatsoever. But there are kids go to the football, particularly away games, where you're not sitting beside all your friends like you normally would at home games. It's going to make some people uncomfortable. People perhaps with asthma and things like that suffer even more when these things happen. It's not fair, and it's not actually considering the bigger picture and the bigger support as a whole.
Well, the thing about smoke bombs and flares, I'm entirely with you. I don't mind them at all. Not an issue with them in the slightest. However, they're not allowed. And furthermore, that's nothing to do with the bill. It's just, stadium rules are that you're not allowed pyrotechnics, and that's it. There's no two ways about it. This flares and smoke bombs have absolutely nothing to do with the bill. It is just the ground. It's the rules of the stadium. But it doesn't help your cause when you are openly breaking the rules of the stadium. No matter how harsh you think those rules are, you still can't do it. You know, I happen to think that some drugs legislations are harsh, but I'm not going to protest that by walking about outside the Houses of Parliament, smoking like joints. I mean, that's not what you do. There's a point.
And I, for one, am disappointed.
Well, I'm down in London Thursday, Friday with work, so I might do. But that's the point. You still need to follow the rules while you're protesting them. That's how you do it. That's how you gain respect for your argument. You don't gain any respect by, openly just flaunting the rules and then not even, criticising those that do it, but taking to social media to say, oh, well, the rules are rubbish anyway. You don't get anywhere with that. And unfortunately, because I do think that the bill is completely flawed and needs to be changed, it's quite depressing because it's never going to be, because there is not any opposition in government to it, because Scottish Labour are so inept. And there is absolutely no opposition to it in the real world, because out with the football, out with the end section at Fir Park and the Green Brigade section at Celtic Park, out with that, nobody, it's not really a big deal. Nobody really bothers about it. And until those respective campaigns get their act together, nobody is going to bother about it. So I think we can safely say that for all the moaning in social media and chants at football stadiums, the bill will be here to stay.
Do you think it's perhaps time for our fans to get their own houses in order and make their own stance and make their own decisions rather than aligning themselves with other groups? The chat in the past has been that the club have given more and more leeway towards that end section and allowed things that perhaps wouldn't have been allowed even 6 or 7 years ago at Fir Park to go on, particularly focusing and standing up at the football and a bit of movement, the banners and everything else. They do get a fair bit of scope to do not quite what they like, but to do a fair bit more than they used to be able to do. Do you think it's maybe diluted by aligning themselves with a fairly unpopular group of Celtic supporters, even amongst their own support? I was speaking to a Celtic supporter at work today who was far from kind in his assessment of the Green Brigade, but he believes that the arrests and the kind of media that will follow that is kind of a badge of honour for the Green Brigade. I don't know. That's, of course, only his opinion. But I did think that, well, it does get them back in the news, and the FAC organisation, there's a Celtic scarf around the logo. I struggle to take it as a group representing a wide range of football fans, and that's basically for a number of reasons, but the whole presentation of it seems very much weighted towards Celtic.
Well, I think there was a point where we were going to actually speak to the FAC or the FAC, whatever you want to call them, but I think once we all had a look at basically their statement, which was about 7 pages long, we decided that it was sort of heavily leaning towards Celtic rather than football fans in general, and that's why we end up not speaking to them. Whether or not our own fans who are involved or interested in, you know, their match day experience, if you want to call it that, want to join up with them, and that's entirely up to them. You know, I think we've all spoke to them, we've all heard their reasons. You know, so they can do that if they wish, but it certainly didn't win them any favours with, you know, the people who weren't involved. You seen it on Steamer Online, you know, they were all basically arguing about whether or not that should have actually taken place. As Jay's rightly pointed out as well, you know, there are flaws in this sort of, you know, the bill. There is some changes that need to be made to it. But again, the only thing that I was going to say was obviously covered by Jay. They need to learn how to act within the rules that are set before they can even contemplate getting spoken to and taken seriously about getting them changed. Match day experience for somebody might be getting bothered setting up a flare and shiting in another dose bag, but you know, if you're there with your wains and your wife, that's not going to help you. You know, you might be there to watch your football.
Particularly if you're the one shiting in the Lidl's bag.
I bet the guy had a smile on his face when he was doing it. You know, if you're there with your wife and your wains and you're there to watch a team who you support, you know, enjoy the football, hopefully enjoy a victory, and you've got, you know, a couple of drunk guys running about you, it certainly ruins the experience. You know, I'm not saying there shouldn't be drunk people at football or anything like that, but if they're not behaving, that's where it comes down to it. And these sort of protests, you know, banning orders, whatever, you know, whatever happens, you know, as Jay rightly says, I don't think anything's going to change, and it's certainly not going to change if you don't want to have the rules in it.
I think you know, the Fans Against Criminalisation, although the name suggests otherwise, I don't think there's any doubt that it is, you know, for Celtic fans. There's obviously nothing wrong with that at all, but I think that, you know, it's a misconception if anybody believes that it's anything other than that. It's definitely purely, you know, based around, I would say, not particularly Celtic fans, but the Green Brigade. That is almost the political wing, if you like, of the Green Brigade. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but for me, when Heavy Hands, Empty Stands kind of appeared after St Mirren away, I thought there was good. I thought there was great potential there. You know, I've personally been involved in politics pretty much my whole life, and I think there is, you know, there's a gap there for a properly run campaigning, you know, group, because this is political legislation we're talking about. Strip away the whole idea of football teams and coloured scarves and logos and stuff like that. We're talking about political legislation that certain groups find heavy-handed or unfair and want it reviewed. And there is scope for, you know, a campaign there away from Fans Against Criminalisation, though, because I think too often the line between campaign group against the bill and Green Brigade apologists is breached on far too regular occasion for that particular group to be taken seriously. So when Heavy Hands, Empty Stands first appeared, I thought there was great potential there. Not even just for Motherwell fans, but for, you know, non-Old Firm fans to perhaps come together and, you know, properly campaign against political legislation. But again, part of that is being responsible for, you know, your criticism that you're dishing out, you know, being critical of your own fans should you need to be. And instead, all that's really happened is Heavy Hands, Empty Stands is a chant that is occasionally sung at away games, and is a Facebook page that occasionally posts up a statement when, you know, Motherwell fans feel as though they've been hard done by, which is a disappointment because there was potential there to do it properly. That's not, you know, patronising or anything like that. I just think that if you're not going to be prepared to criticise your own fans when they are clearly doing things that they shouldn't be, then you can't expect to be taken seriously when you then criticise the rules themselves.
Yeah, I've said before when we've discussed matters around this that I'm always reluctant to make it sound like we're criticising our own supporters, and particularly when there's members of the boys that we're good friends with and know they're good people that mean well, but there's a certain bit of me that feels that some have the blinkers on to this and believe that it has to be a kind of us versus them type scenario where until someone else acts, then nothing will change. And I don't really believe that is the case. I think the attitudes among supporters have to change. They need to kind of basically just need to abide by the rules a bit more to make it a bit of an easier life for themselves. As I say, the method of which the support the team has been praised to the hilt, and rightfully so. So, but does it really require the wee extra elements, the pitch invasions, the smoke bombs? I don't think so.
I think it is just that key. I mean, we're saying they as though there's this one group that kind of, you know, campaign against the bill but also cause trouble. We're talking about, you know, one person. All it takes is one person with a smoke bomb. But it's how you then react to it. If you take to social media and talk about how, oh, well, smoke bombs aren't that bad anyway, well, tough. They're not allowed. It's as simple as that. You can, you know, think that they're the greatest thing that's ever been invented, but until they're permitted in a football ground, if you want to be taken seriously, you don't take them. And if someone in your fan and your support does use them, then you will gain a hell of a lot of respect if you then come out and say, we don't condone this, and we would ask, you know, if fans are going to come along with us, and please restrain for this behaviour because it's, you know, it's doing our argument a disservice. That doesn't happen, and that is why, you know, it doesn't get anywhere. You know, when we're sitting, you know, reading the news or whatever, and they're talking about Rangers fans or Celtic fans engaging in sectarian singing, and they use the word minority, and we all have a wee chuckle and we think, oh, well, it's not the minority. It very well might be, but our perception is it's not, because all we kind of see is those news reports and get that impression. It's the exact same here. It's all very well. It might be a minority of Motherwell fans who set off smoke bombs or invade the park, but when that's what's on the news and when that's what people are seeing, then those who aren't going to football matches, those who aren't football fans, those, you know, the wider public who you kind of do need to get on board if you want to change this, they will see that and think that's just what football fans do, unless there is a voice from Motherwell fans, Celtic fans, whoever it is, you know, not condoning this behaviour, actually coming out and criticising it and saying, no, this isn't part of our campaign. But, you know, it's not happening. And as I said, unfortunately, there is absolutely no way I can see whatsoever that the bill is going to be scrapped when it should be.
Guys, I think that's just about all we've got time for. Just before we go, Jay, this week's Remember Well question.
Well, I left it quite late, so I'll just read one out because it was quite a good one. The Remember Well question was basically just looking for your favourite memories from the Scottish Cup third, or, you know, fourth round as it's now known. And one of the ones that came in was Scott Cormack. He said, I remember my dad taking me on the train for the third round tie against the holders Aberdeen in 1991. I was cheerily singing the theme tune from Alvin and the Chipmunks on the way, and remember my ever optimistic father telling me, you might as well sing now because you'll no be singing on the way back. Had a wimpy for lunch and found 50p on the way into the ground. Only memories of the game itself were Alex McLeish having a first half goal disallowed and Stevie Kirk with his great goal and the wild celebrations. I'm pretty sure it was a stranger that threw me what seemed 20 feet in the air when the ball hit the net. Great start to a great cup run. So aye, that's just getting a mention because Alvin and the Chipmunks is in it.
Guys, thanks very much as always.
Cheers.
No pyro, no party.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you. Goodbye. Small team genius, knock off from the city. Strung out on lasers and slash back blazers and ate all your razors while pulling the waders. Talking about Monroe and walking on Snow White. New York's a go-go and everything tastes nice. Poor little greenie. Gene Genie lives on his back. Gene Genie loves chimney stacks. He's outrageous, he screams and he bawls. But Gene Genie, let yourself go. Like a man, but he smiles like a
child. She loved him, but just for a short while. She scratched in the sand, let go his hand. He says he's a beautician, sells you nutrition, keeps all your dead hair for making up underwear. Poor little green.